Hello, and welcome to another Sarasota Institute podcast. The Sarasota Institute is a 21st century think tank that is focused on 10 major topics we feel important for the future of humanity. Please go to sarasotainstitute.global to learn more. The Sarasota Institute is a nonprofit corporation.
Hi, I'm Jason Voss of the Sarasota Institute. Welcome to our podcast. I'm one of the three co-founders. Joining us today is Dr. James Fathers. He is of the Syracuse University School of Design, of which he was also a founding director. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. I saw your presentation at one of our events recently. I thought it was super, super interesting because I think design lurks behind the scenes and provides experience, not just the atmospherics provide a unique experience to all walks of life, whether it's a cup or a glass or an entire room or a wing or the way a business is structured. So I'm super excited about this conversation. My first question for you is, what makes this moment in history the golden age of design? That's a term that I've heard thrown about quite a bit. And for me, as an outsider looking in, I live in Sarasota, Florida. There's a mid-century modern movement that Sarasota is quite famous for. So I know about design having had what I thought was a golden age in the mid-50s, mid-60s. How is this era different? What makes it the golden age of design, you think?
So when David and I wrote our book and decided to call it the golden age of design, in many ways, it's a shortcut. And for me, for us, as we discussed it, We could have called the book, if we get our stuff together, if we step up as designers, then this could well be the golden age of design, or this really needs to be the golden age of design because there's so much to do, but we could mess it up completely and it might be absolutely not the golden age of design. So, you know, the moment for me is this huge potential for designers and design-aware people to get together and really leverage all the potential of our discipline for the good of the planet and all of the things that need to happen. But it's that prediction moment of we could be entering into this amazing space. There's so many things we can do. There's so many emerging things that are happening, but we could absolutely mess it up and not take the opportunities that's staring us in the face.
Sure. So I've done a disservice, I think, to our audience and not starting with a more obvious first question. The word design, right? Capital D design is central to our conversation today. But I realize that many people design is, you know, the cut of a suit, right? Like that's how they think about it. Talk to us about what design means to you and why this is a globally relevant conversation beyond just aesthetics.
Got it. So one of the big controversies in design in general is whether we're all designers or designers are people who are specifically trained. I tend to go down the route of the former because I think we all design our lives. But I think there are certain people that have been trained to do that a little bit more effectively. So I don't tend to wave my piece of paper around and say, hey, I'm a designer, you can't do this. But I think the interesting thing in design is that we intelligently look at what's going on and see if we can find ways to improve it, find ways to sort of make it more efficient, more effective, more simple, more elegant. And often that is looking at this whole systemic ecosystem that it sits within and working out how it engages. Now, the challenge with, and, you know, one of the chapters in the book is all about the fact that design has failed massively in the past. It's not that they meant to fail. It's not that there was some evil intent behind it, but it was design is intrinsically linked to the Industrial Revolution. That's what it was birthed. And it was all about making profits. It was all about selling more things. And, you know, the idea of design being something that improves the way things operate and way things look to sell more units. One of the famous designers that we quote, Henry Dreyfuss, said that design is all about profits. You know, Raymond Loewy talks about it's all about the curve. And in that, he talked about the curve of the fender on this gorgeous car that made everyone think of sex and want to buy the thing, as well as the sales curve. And so it's one of those things that's been used and misused through the ages. I'm a huge fan, and I'm also a huge skeptic, because it's been used in amazing ways and it's been used in really awful ways. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it sounds to me like maybe it's fair to ask you to compare and contrast, and maybe there is no contrast. What's the difference between design thinking and systems thinking? What I'm hearing you say is design thinking is intentional and intelligent about what the hell we're doing, right? How's design thinking in your mind different than systems thinking?
For me, systems thinking sits under an umbrella of design thinking. Systems thinking, certainly from my perspective, came out of design thinking when designers started to look at the overall ecosystem within which a design would fit. And they tried to map it and understand it and understand what people did within it and understand how it operated, and therefore what the best design intervention might be to optimize that system, to help the people within that system really work, whether it be an intake system in a hospital or an alternative currency system or a voting system or a way of moving resources. So system design is a subset of design, but to me, it sits within the same thing. I don't think you can be a good designer unless you understand the system. And I'm not sure you can be a good systems person unless you understand design thinking. But, you know, some of your audience may disagree with that.
Well, I've got a question. And this is just, I am such a huge fan of systems thinking. And a gentleman, UK-based, who I've had done quite a lot of work with over the years, he and I had a discussion one time at a pub. And the discussion boiled down to all the world's problems boil down to the fact that, you know, there are systems thinkers and there are not systems thinkers, and the twain shall not meet. You specifically are educating design thinking, systems thinking. Do you think that's a true statement, or do you think that's too strongly drawn? Is it true there are systems thinkers and there are not?
I think we all have the potential to be systems thinkers.
Or design thinkers as well. Yeah.
I think some people are educated in a way that's so narrow and so focused, and maybe personality-wise, that's the way they tend to go, that they don't see the bigger picture. You know, I teach engineers and I teach designers. I teach divergent thinkers and I teach convergent thinkers. And sometimes a convergent thinker can say, you know, this is the solution, and they don't quite see all this. Whereas a divergent thinker also has the potential risk of going, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this, then they can't actually get into the focus. You know, when I talk to my students, as I will be in a few weeks' time, I'll be using the example. So do you know how you think? Do you know if you're a divergent thinker by bent or by, or are you more of a convergent thinker? And we talk about, so if you're going out for a night on the town, you know, and there's a group of you, are you the one that says, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this, could do this, but you can't make a decision? Or are you the one that says, look, it's a no-brainer, we're doing this? You know, and that's the simple way for students to go, yeah, I've met people like that. And then the challenge is, okay, what skills do I need to apply and perfect and hone that help me get out of my stuckness, whether it's the stuckness of this or the stuckness of this?
For sure. So I'm trying to think next question to ask you because of the unfolding nature of the conversation. So you went there with divergent convergence. So let's focus in on divergent thinking here. And you've also used the word ecosystem a couple times. Sure. Let's talk about sustainability, right? Which is a natural fit for design thinking. I know sustainable design is super important to you. But to the degree that we can, A, talk about sustainable design, but then like give us some practical examples of how design makes a valuable assist to sustainability.
Okay. So I tend to use the word regenerative design nowadays. I don't want to be one of these iconoclasts that say you can't use the old word because it's so out of date and so it's unhelpful to us. I think use whatever term will inspire you to actually do some good in the world. Regenerative design, for me, imbues this idea of we're trying to do something that is going to have more chance to actually sustain and carry on and be using resources in a responsible way. It references back to those people, the indigenous people. There's a lot of indigenous thinking that really can inform regenerative design. And so the challenge with design is there's so much potential for it to work in that space, but we're working against a history where design has often been a really poor use of resources, a poor use of, encouraging people into an aspirational and a consumer-driven lifestyle where we're not thinking of how we're engaging in the planet. But fundamentally, design the core of design is helping people and helping culture to change and shift. Now, we've shifted it in bad ways in the past. Design has the potential to shift it in good ways. So communication design has this huge potential to help people to see all of the good things they could do, how they can think about travel in a different way so they're not jumping on an airplane every 5 minutes, how they're thinking about the way they move around the planet, the way they what they eat, whether they can move towards another a more plant-based diet, where they can move towards more sustainable and regenerative ways of having a lighter footprint. And also engaging with, the real big actors, the ones that are having the massive impact, which are the big transnational corporations, to help them to really, work internally to actually, lighten their footprint. The challenge has been that those big companies have, over the last 30 years, have put it on us and talked about, what's your carbon footprint? And the reality is they haven't been really looking at their carbon footprint, but there's been a lot of use of design in this spin place to sort of go, look there. And actually, we've got to use design to focus in and say, okay, what tangible, specific things can we do? Someone was talking about recycling the other day, and if you look at the list of things that are effective in sustainable and regenerative lifestyles, recycling is pretty low down. Now, it doesn't mean we shouldn't do it, but there are a whole bunch of things further up, including what we choose to eat and the way we move around the planet and the way we heat our houses and those sort of things.
So give us a tangible example, right? So the food one is probably too open-ended for many of our audience new to this conversation. Talk to us about living in our house in a design thinking type way that helps with sustainability.
So I think regenerative power, and you know, green power. So putting solar panels on your roof and, tapping into wind farms better insulation. I think one of the interesting things right at this very moment, when you keep seeing, like California has been at sort of over 100 degrees for the past week or so, I think, okay, so what do we do about that? The answer isn't just to flip on the AC unit, because that's just burning more power. What can we look at in terms of the way people have lived in those sort of climates for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years? What can we see in terms of Islamic architecture, in terms of South Indian architecture, where you can, Mughal architecture, where you can start to design buildings in such a way that they really can help be much more livable in without using power to do that? So we're learning from the past, we're optimizing it, we're using things like 3D printers to print buildings at the same time as using old and tried and tested designs to optimize them. And then we're using things like mushrooms. There's some amazing, one of the flights of fancy and delight that we went on in writing the book was understanding all of the different amazing things that mushrooms can do. You can grow buildings now. You can grow buildings so the mycelium can be used as sending electronic signals through the building and things like that. So, and I am no mycologist, but I'm excited by all the potential of those sort of things.
So. Yeah, so such a wide-ranging answer. Let me give a couple of very practical examples. It blows my mind that when people are architecting a building and they have control over how the house sits in terms of its footprint, I'm not talking about a stupidly designed development where some person has drawn some random squiggly line, which is going to be the road, and the houses sit relative to the road based on some arbitrary choice for design. It's like, let's orient towards the pathway of the sun during the course of the day. There's no reason to have a southern exposure in a southerly climb house. It's absolutely ridiculous. You ought to have northerly exposures and light in the indirect light, because it keeps the house cooler. Yeah. Duh.
Like, been done for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, all of that learning, all of the use of domes to reflect the use of, you can see it in all of this indigenous and traditional architecture all around the world. And then we put up these things that look like a kid's drawing. You know, they've got a roof like this, and they've got straight walls, and they've got window, as much window as possible. Well, windows is, you get huge solar gain, so you make the windows smaller, or you open it up. You use things like ground source heat pumps to when you're building the thing, you put the infrastructure in place to really understand it. You use communal heating and cooling so that, you haven't got this individualized block that you have to be sustainable on your own. You're using a community idea of community solar, community heating, community cooling, community resources. I mean, one of the things that Rick Papanak is one of my heroes, and in 73 he was talking about sharing, and he's saying, does everyone need a washing machine? Does everyone need a drill? Does everyone need a lawnmower? Does everyone, and those ideas sort of went by the wayside, and now people are coming back to them and going, let's build this system where you can share a car. And in certain parts of the world, you go, share a car, that's ridiculous. The car is all about my independence and my status. And other parts of the world are going, yeah, that's a great idea. You can share my driveway too. You can share. And so there's a huge movement of sharing, the sharing economy, which has grown up recently. And some people have monetized it and some people haven't. But they're all ideas of how we can have a lighter footprint. And actually, because we don't all need individual things. But we, for years, we've been told that we need those things. You know, so the post-war economy said that this is what it is to have a house. It has to have all these things in it, and this is what it is to have a life. And you need at least two cars, and you need a dog and a white picket fence, and you need 2.5 kids or whatever. And we have to blow those things up and go, okay, how's this work? How do other people do this around the world? What's the broader wisdom? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, to me, the worst version of design thinking is the couple whose children have left and they build a 10,000 square foot house. Right. So anyway, let's move on real quickly. So what are that was high level, right? Talking sustainability. Let's go micro level, right? This is convergent thinking here. What are the characteristics of great design? Like, is there a bullet point list that you carry around in your mind that you can share at a cocktail conversation?
To me, it's summed up in a single sentence. You know, when I come across great design, it prompts a quiet internal smile, and it makes me go, of course, yeah, obvious, why do I do this? It makes life simpler. It pleases in this sort of almost visceral way. But it's not just about the form. It's about that, wow, that is a problem I never knew I actually had, and someone's discovered it and solved it. And the flip side of that is something that tells you you desperately need it, but you can't quite work out why you need it, and because they've created this desire and this aspiration. So it's often it's easy to say what it isn't. And I think that's what it isn't. And what it is this, this moment of revelation, go, okay, yeah. That just makes sense. And, thank you so much for spending the time and doing that,
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. And I think that This is a personal preference, just because I love intuition. People use intuitive, and I hate it when they do that because they don't really mean intuitive. What they mean is simple and logical. Because intuition itself is a flash of knowing and understanding, which the user may have or the client may have, but the actual design aspect of it is that there's a logic to it and there's a simplicity to it that is beautiful. Thank you very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. James, where can people find out more information about you if they should desire to?
So, you know, my page at Syracuse University, so if you just search James Fathers at Syracuse University, you'll find me, you'll find some bios, you'll find a contact page. That's probably the easiest way. I'm trying all sorts of new ventures, but that's probably the most stable place at the moment. Other things will be there, but yeah.
Understood. Thanks so much for being with us. You and the audience as well, thanks for joining us. You can find this as well as other podcast recordings at sarasotainstitute.global. Become a member and you can have access to all these cool thinkers and their cool ideas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please go back to where you downloaded this podcast to find another one that might be of interest to you. Thank you.